Throughout the late 60s and 70s, the number of women studying computer science was growing faster than the number of men. Oddly enough, the drop-off for women in computing occurred around the same time that personal computers started hitting the marketplace. The IBM PC came out in 1982, Apple released its Macintosh in 84, and some argue that marketing strategies were geared primarily towards men around that time.
Computers used to be a mystery to me, but that was before Jerry. Jerry's my computer man.
Elliot's at work on a book report using Scripcit on Radio Shack's Color Computer 3. It hooks up to his TV. And Jeff's at his Radio Shack Color Computer 3 playing the newest football game.
Using an Apple II is very easy. The only hard part is getting your kid away from it. Of course, if all else fails, there's one last thing you can try. Get him an Apple of his own.
Now, I'm really glad for Jerry, the computer guy, and that Elliot and Jeff found after-school activities on their computers, and that the father-son duo decided to get another Macintosh. But where are all the women in these ads? Or the mother-daughter duos? I know advertising isn't the sole reason for the drop of female computer scientists, but it seems to have played at least a minor role. Circumstances within academic and professional environments certainly haven't helped retain women either. Actually, one of the biggest drop-offs for girls occurs right around middle school. 66% of girls between ages 6 to 12 report being interested or enrolled in computing programs. But those numbers more than half for girls once they hit 13. By freshman year in college, just 4% of women report being interested or enrolled in CS. And to be honest, the issues that Alicia and Aaron dealt with in their high school programs aren't so far off from some of the challenges faced by women 10, 20, or more than 30 years their senior.
My name is Lynn McCarthy, and I'm an artist and a software developer, and I'm also an assistant professor at UCLA Design Media Arts program.
Lauren is also the creator of a library called P5JS, which is a toolkit that makes coding more accessible to artists, designers, educators, and beginning programmers. She's a known leader in her field. Her P5 work is devoted to expanding the boundaries of inclusion. And still, I was surprised to hear how similar some of her experiences were with other girls and women that I spoke with.
Seeing myself kind of doubt my own qualifications, that's where I feel like it manifests the most in this kind of subtle way. It's not like people say, you're a woman, you don't know what you're doing, get out of here. But I do see when I'm working on any kind of like online software development, open source situation, there are these very subtle moments where someone might question something and you wonder if it has to do with your gender or not.
I know we all doubt our abilities at times, but the fact that gender even comes up as a possible explanation is, well, a really troubling testament to where we stand in the 21st century. Like 17-year-old Alicia, Lauren, who's been working in the field for close to a decade, also mentioned these nearly imperceptible comments and actions that made her question her qualifications.
I was having dinner one night with some colleagues, and one person mentioned to me, like, I was up for this job, but then, you know, they couldn't hire me because they had this quota of women that they had to hire, and so it went to the woman in the running. And initially I said, oh, yeah, I think that's what happened to me. Luckily, I'm the woman. And then I caught myself and I was like, no, wait, that's not what I think at all. And what an assumption on this other person's part that you didn't get the job just because they were trying to exercise some quota of woman hiring. And there isn't the possibility that maybe she's just more qualified as a person.
This whole notion of filling a quota, well, it's irritating. Especially if you're among the group of people who is underrepresented. Whether that's women, people of color, transgender, differently abled. Lauren and many of the other women I spoke with didn't want to be at the table because they filled a quota. They wanted to be at the table because they earned their seat.
If you're trying to include more women or more anyone, you got to talk to them and listen and understand how to best invite them. I know some women that will not accept an invitation of extra travel support or whatever because they feel like, oh, I'm just being brought in as a token woman. and I want to be accepted for my qualifications. And I mean, I have no doubt that they're being invited because of their qualifications. But like in my case, if you want to pay for my plane ticket, that's cool. I'll take it. So I think what you really have to do if you are having an event or have some project and you want to invite someone in that is not necessarily part of the majority is to see what is the way that would make them feel comfortable, or what are the things that are standing in their way that made them not already want to sign up or be a part of it, and how do you change those things?
It's not just about women being more proactive or assertive or stepping up to the plate when an opportunity arises. There is also a responsibility of the majority to meet those who are less represented halfway, or more than halfway, really.
If I'm having a developers conference and I want more women there, it's not enough for me to be like, oh, okay, we've got 2 women and 30 men now, and so that's good. We've got 2 women. You know, it needs to be like 50% women, or it needs to be even more than that, because we're pushing against what has been the norm. And so to have an impact on that, I think you have to be sort of drastic. There's not much progress that's going to be made by doing the bare minimum to make change. It's got to feel uncomfortable for everyone because we're doing something different.
I love this point about getting everyone out of their comfort zones. You know, it's not just about one group pushing their boundaries to welcome another. Everyone needs to come together, swim a bit in the uncomfortable space, and learn that their neighbors are not so very different from themselves. The thing is, even when you do make it through the front door and you're given free rein to try what you want to try and to say what you want to say, there are plenty of cases where gender manages to become relevant when it shouldn't. Lauren developed a project called Follower, where users could hire a person, or Lauren in this case, to follow them for a day.
There was some women that I followed, but primarily the applicants were mostly men. And this made sense to me because, like, as a woman, I'm already sort of conscious of, am I in a safe situation? Is anyone following me? So I could see not wanting to play up that dynamic. But one of the funniest things was this one reporter wrote up this article, and when it came out, the headline was, "The world's creepiest social network is just some woman following you." And, you know, it's clickbait, obviously, but it felt to me like there was so much embedded in there that was sort of glossed over, like, yeah, it's just some woman, which is kind of silly and laughable, but what are you implying here? Well, that the opposite would be terrifying, right? That if it's a man, which it is a lot of the time following a woman, it was strange to me that it could be kind of turned around and turned into like a joke. But then also just this headline, just some woman, I tried to think of when I had ever seen a headline anywhere that included the phrase, just some man, and I couldn't.
So much is implied by our choice of language. The word just is so loaded because it's used here to distinguish and also to deflate the presence of a certain group. There are so many words that historically have associations with feminine or masculine traits. For instance, if I say the word sensitive, I imagine most would connect it with one gender, versus if I say the word aggressive, most might affiliate it with another. But really, shame on all you dividers out there, because sensitive and aggressive are gender neutral, as is the word just. I spoke with a lot of people for this episode, and I was struck by how commonly specific words were used to contrast one gender from the other. Like authoritative versus accommodating, or loud versus timid, but the expectations we bring to each adjective are less connected to gender and more closely tied with being in the position of the majority or the minority. Aren't most people more likely to be soft-spoken or timid when they're the odd person out?
A lot of times the setup around open source development is very, well, it's a lot of men. You kind of have to elbow your way in and shout for you to be heard and for your position to be accepted, especially when you're first starting, because people don't know who you are. And I just realized that, you know, that wasn't my inclination at all. And I think it's not what feels comfortable for a lot of women or for a lot of people that are underrepresented in an open source community.
Elbowing your way in, it's something I heard more than once, and I know it's something that comes up often with the open source community, but I was surprised at how often I heard it from the women I spoke with.